Hello. Thank you very much for being all here, despite the weather and St. Patrick's Day. So, we're going to go at it. We just came back from France. We've been living there for a while, and this is actually the first time that we're back in our reading. So it's a bit nerve-wracking, especially to such a wonderful audience and wonderful poems. I was listening to all the poems earlier on. Oh my God, you're all so brilliant, you know? I don't want to read after you. So anyway, I just introduced myself very quickly. Brendan. Brendan plays the clarinet, which is the traditional Irish instrument that you see on the Guinness and all that. His is actually quite a unique instrument in the sense that it was made directly at direct contact with photographs with the actual Trinity College harp. In a special authorization, so it's totally unique in the sense that it is identical to the harp that you see in Trinity College if you go there. It's strung according to the mythology, which is strung in silver and gold. If you see Tristan, if you've heard of Tristan, Tristan played the harp with silver strings. So it's always a big deal to carry it around, as you can imagine. It's quite scary, especially since we carried it with a monstrous dog in a very small car today. So, Brendan's originally is from North, his family is from North Cork, the street. And I'm French, 100% French. So you'll have to excuse my various stumbling. Sometimes I miss things like that, so be patient. Thank you. This said, I've lived most of my life in Ireland, so I sound French, but somewhere in there there's quite a lot of the Irish psyche. So, anyway, the first poem that we're going to do is called Cutting the Scallons. The scallons, for you who don't do any gardening, it's like when you go to plant a scallion, which is very apt at the moment because you should be planting them now. You should be here, you should be planting the scallions now, today. And you cut the potato in four pieces or five pieces with the germ and you plant it. And that's how you make the potato grow much longer, if you want, I would say. So anyway, that's the scallions. And I refer that poem to a place called The City, which is at the Paps. It's below the Paps, and it was a very big mythical thing. People used to bring the cattle there to look at cured and all that. And anyway, it's close to Rathmore and it's the city. It's a megalithic remains. Cutting the scallons. A gritty rain falls on the city, on the Paps, and seven ravens scry the entrails of clouds for the deeds of heroes. And Tim cuts the scallons. The cuckoo spit bones on blade of grass. They might be blight later in the year. Tim sits by the range, talks in unfinished sentences of mountain sheep and mountain men. Cups of tea and cigarettes, bacon, newspaper wrap sways from the beige ceiling. Shoves back an escaped comma of hair, the colourful touch, and tells you of black torn hedges. The evening light is the amber of whiskey and stewed tea. He pulls out the box from under the leatherette chaise lounge. Do you know this one? And the notes stagger on the edge of fields and bogs, like rain in August. They swell your heart. Years later, a tune filled with turf smoke and the voice of women lingers on your fingers, and so you name it, Cutting the Scallons. I did look to some sort of a system so I could find my clothes, and it's absolutely useless. So, yeah, you see, I put little things with numbers, and I thought, and then they just fall off. So I'm just going to look at the index for the forms. Right, the next one I'm going to do is called Love in Corporate Wedding. Corporate Wedding, excuse me. It's Irish. Well, as you know, is the Dingle Peninsula, basically. And Brendan is now hating me because I wasn't supposed to do that in America, so
they
did a little bit.
That's correct. Take all the bits off
find,
now.
I just can't find the So, Love and Corporate Women. That day, I woke up to an honest sky. And your body was curled against mine like bracken fronds or newborn leaves in spring, soft and young in the crook of my belly. Through the sash window, morning surged forward with its slate blue sky, scratched by seagulls, with its strident scattering of houses, yellows, pinks and greens, somersaulting down to the harbour. Slayhead. The road, oh the road, sometimes a stream, more time just wishful thinking, but always a dancer, the acrobat, dizzying, leaning towards the ocean, as if wanting to slide, to tumble, down, 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 down to the rocks below, down to where the waves spawn the souls of suckers. In the distance, the skellig's canines sharpened by time, the fit of monks snarl at an obsidian sky, and my heart did not flips. Ventry. The memory of the sand, a strand grained with ossicles of armies and waves of killing women. Doombeg. A southwesterly gale of darkies. Kilmacheller. Flat work of stone walls and fuchsias, hanging in the green saturated fields. Do no more. You said, trust me, I have an innate sense of direction when it comes to the west. And we got lost. For a lifetime, between a brooding earth and a stone sky, we looked in springs for the effervescence of watercress, pure madness, but only found in raucous forms. Of clouds shifting on amethyst hills, and so the madness remains. Thank you. we did a set list after all the little bits in. We've been doing this all afternoon, and you know, that's the way things go. I can't figure out. I have the last home, though. I can see last. So maybe I should start with the last one. My most apologies. So this is a poem called Anamkara. I know the name is not terribly original. I didn't want to put it back when I wrote it. I thought that was going to be really clever. Wonderful that this guy mentioned earlier on, Jimmy Slevin, extraordinary guitarist who played this, also wonderful people, pushes the music for me a few years ago, but second best friend. So
I'm ready.
You're ready.
Okay.
And I'm Clara. A pink moon is rising and I'm back, and your hair is the snake in Barbadella, and your skin is as sweet as spring's first milk, as it has always been. Don't talk. Let me unravel you instead. Let me undo your storms into soft ribbons of rain. Let me lick your bloated wounds. Let me be your quickening pulse. The shiver of your hand on the curve of my back. Let me be you. Again. Don't talk. Ocean, like the sap to the earth, I'm back, risen from my bed of scones and bones, risen from the blood-soaked grass, risen from the ashes of horse fires, I'm back, to you, back to stretch the shadows, and shatter the night, and spin the day green. So the next one I would like to do is probably not all that appropriate anymore. But in my mind it still is, it's always appropriate. A few years ago there was a big campaign against, they were trying to put a motorway through Tara, and it was heartbreaking. I was living in France at the time and I was seeing it from a distance, and it was heartbreaking, and I think it's still happening. I feel that it's important to not let people forget, Tara was lost, but there are still many causes. For one, I live in Bantry and I see that they've got some sort of authorization to basically destroy Bantry Bay by harvesting all the seaweed that's there. There's a petition online, you know, please do sign it, because I think we have to preserve our heritage and we have to preserve our environment, especially mine, because this is such a small place, but yet it can make a tremendous difference, I think. So the Rape of Tara. Time hinged on indifference, mid-pattern time, mid-circling land, mid-kernels of history, silenced, like the stone of destiny. Myths reduced to artifacts, dormant in clefts of rock and ashes, whilst the wide vein of the Bohan still beats tight on the breastbone of the Morrigan. Amergin, silenced. Cuculain, silenced. Riders of the Sidhe slain by reavers, bearers of destruction, who broke no stone for the building of cairns, but gouged the land for greed, for idiocy. Myths silenced, time hinged on indifference. I think, you know, I don't know how you write poetry, but I write a lot of sort of biographical stuff. And I wrote this one. It's sort of a family history, so I hope it doesn't bore you. It's not because it's French. Yeah, my poetry is like half French, half Irish. So I can't always go on as much as I love Ireland, unless sometimes I have to go on and say, well, you know, I'm not Irish, you know, I have to connect to my own son. I think I heard somebody speaking with a French accent earlier on, so I'm not sure if he even knows what I'm going to talk about, because I'm going to talk about cheese. I'm going to talk about a cheese that we have in France, which is called Concoyote. You know the Concoyote? It's a liquid cheese. So it's like it's running like pump. Anyway, my great grandmother was from a really cold part of France. Used to make that cheese in under a duvet in the bed, to the great disgust of my father and all the little children I had to sleep with. So this is a poem about cheese. Not many people write poems about cheese. The Making of Concoyote. Poets have been mysteriously silent on the subject of cheese, said Chesterton. I am the keeper of stories of no importance, acts of life as benign as the curdling of milk in an earthenware jug, as choreographed as the geometry of logs in the woodshed. What does it matter now how Marie-Augustine made Concoyote when I alone remember a word I never knew? When her old children lie scattered in death in countries of no winter? Franche-Comté was the coldest province, winters of hungry wolves, feeding on corpses wrenched out of freshly dug graves. Winters when rivers froze, when words congealed on lips. Marie-Augustine's husband was a stonemason. He chiseled roses on tombstones, carved a cross on Notre's church, carried it to the roof on his back. Marie-Augustine went to dances on crutches. To make Concoyote, the cheese of the poor, beat the buttermilk until it coagulates. She forgot a bad leg when it was. He told her she was more beautiful than the weev that he had seen diving in the languid black waters of Seine. She confessed to seeing ghosts on her way to Vespers. They mythified their lives to warm the January nights, to erase the screams of an infant girl dying of hunger. By the enameled stove, they dream-fed their three daughters with tales of princely blood and dark gypsies. When it is purged of whey, squeeze and press the meton and ripen it under your eiderdown. And then there was the kind wolf that followed him from Bray, and the donkey she brought from the circus who died and resurrected on market days to the word, de Goulimore. At that time, when he swam the Nile, a drowning child on his chest. After a few days, it would have become yellow, elastic, and strong smell of fermentation. He caught the biggest spikes while she netted crayfish and frogs, and there was a time for the chanterelle, and a time for the purslane, and there was a time for Mirabelle, and all faded to gold. Eat the netting with some water, or pink garlic maybe, a splash of straw wine. I am the keeper of secrets no one wants to hear. I am the keeper of recipes no one wants to cook. I am the keepers of stories of no importance. I am the keeper of their dead seasons. So was a midday demon, wrapped in red, wrapped in green, and my mouth was swollen with suck, and my breath was humming with pollen, and my song was a shadows of bees and brittle insects, and my dance was a sarabande amongst the fire weeds. And I turned to the stones, Deshel, again magnetized to some southern earth, who stirs the purple shadows of fountains that never quench. Whilst you, tribal you, lit fires on the mound of hostages, scooped the light from the bracken nights, sifted the dust of solstices, cast to sea the opalescent bones of equinoxes, Deshel. And we held our breath to syncopation of tides, and we drank from the chalice, flame white and cold as moons, and we cried and we spried the sky for wrens and petrels, and we danced amongst the ice skeleton of leaves, Deshel. Because Brendan is helping me along, I think I have to say a couple of words maybe about what he's playing. I don't know if it interests you at all, but Brendan played a tune he composed, it's called an Irish Icaro. Icaro is a type of song that is sang by shaman. Not supposedly, but that's not the correct word, curanderos, in the Amazon, when they do ceremonies with ayahuasca and plants and things like that. So this is an Icaro, so it's supposed to be a tune that sends you away into sort of other realms of consciousness. And most of the tunes that Brendan's playing tonight, he has composed himself. And there's always a sort of hidden spiritual angle to it. But otherwise it's quite normal. Seven is the sacred number I fold into the stock fragranced with 36 spices. And I rub with burning hands the steaming grain in argan oil, rolling it until it separates like seeds of sands between the fingers of the siracle, rolling it until it's fluffy, a spume of clouds that rise from the steaming sea at Isalira. And I will address it like a jewel of June on the first plateau of arabesques on cinnabar, and I will dance while carrying it, because my heart is dancing, for my lover has returned again from the cold lands he sometime inhabits, his heart filled with the melancholy of snow. Tonight, to warm his eyes and round his belly, and make him a kilihikuskus. zdarzało, no, czyli that you just can't see the numbers. You don't know what page you're doing. I can't read anything. I don't think that even passes on the field anyway. So it's not all a happy couscous. I came in the sort of mid-70s when I first came to Ireland. And it was a very different place, and now it's sort of coming to light, you know, and people are very, very surprised. Like, then I'm not sure to call that. It was absolutely much worse when I first came to Ireland. I was so shocked because there was actually, between the Ireland I met then and the France of the time, you know, we were just post sort of 1968 and all that, and there was a huge gap. It was it was terrifying. Dublin 1975, and Mary worked for Fitzwilliam Square, genuflecting at closing time for wretched men in nylon shirts, too drunk to know, too drunk to care, that whilst on bended knees she taught on me of communion. From the Liberties to the Green, Dublin vomited poets and patriots under the gassy glare of street lights, leaning on convoluted shadows and not quite balloted out, saints and scum spewed out Spencer Hill and dirty old town like a bad pint. In 1975, love smelled stout and finger chips. Connected to that very sad period, there was many women that suffered, of course. And this is basically the story of one of such women that I met. Was a wonderful, wonderful person, very, very damaged. And she could be finished. Her bruised story. They called her the little woman. Her man, her strapping sons with hair like wings of dying crows flapping on their foreheads. They threw things at her when she was slow as the day, when they were drunk, and they crushed the roses on the wallpaper. They called her the little woman too, her gummy-nailed husband of forever, of broken noses and punched up miscarriage. No one blamed him, least of all the little woman. For the time he had hacked at her hip with an axe, for the time that she'd walked 5 miles in the snow alone to give birth to their third child, no one blamed him either. For the time he slept with their eldest, not one blamed him, least of all the little woman, for those were the things men did to stop other men sniffing your weakness, to save the name you'd made mud by marrying a buffer. With age, she got thankful for her job as a cleaner, for him fishing all night, for the clothes he let her buy in the Ivy Market, for the lipstick he allowed her to wear, for her figure stretched like dough by 7 birds, for her pearly teeth having been pulled out, for a slap-leathered face, for Eileen and her child, for being it less. The little woman, by the time she died, she couldn't shrink no more. And a fairly old poem of mine, which has become quite up to time now. It's ancient. We used to live in Kerry, and right up down by the road, there was by Boring, there was a keen. Now, I don't know what the keen was then. Achilles, a place where they bury and baptize children. Very much what's happening in Tuam, except it's been happening for centuries. You know, this Tuam is not new. It's been going on forever. The victims are always the children and the women, the unbaptized, those that are sort of the suicide, the you know, people that are on the margin of society, basically. The weak. So I wrote that. I did not know that Tuam was ever going to happen. I wrote this about 20 years ago, but it's just come back to me. The killing. This cold, wet wind that rings the trees in the killing. It's an evil wind that flagellates the stones. It's not her soul keening for the fruit of her sin through unhallowed clay, tearing where a small body lays. Not her screaming, incantations, acrid curses, damnation. It's a mad wind that cries in the killing. An old lady that used to, well, she kind of wear me out of it. She was called Tonya, and she was from the Piedmont. She did she had me plenty and taught me how to do that sort of things. Mediterranean cooking. Tonya, in her dark kitchen, most days made polenta. She churned impossible amount of crushed corn. The soft white flesh of her large arms strangled by the navy ligature of rolled-up nylon sleeves. On the old cooker, civet simmered in wine and blood. Some days she made ravioli or fettuccine or gnocchi, plowing the dough with her fat fingers, filling, cutting, filling, folding, filling, folding. At 7, the men gathered at the table, plastered dust in their wiry hair, and poured black wine into opaque tumblers. Ashes from yellow cigarettes fell on the old cloth, punctuated in sentences of half finished. They ignored her as she served them the slivered half moon of mushrooms. Slippery and briny, sharp with coriander, or tender cushions of used cheese in broth redolent of silver sage. When she retreated to her pungent kitchen, they called, "Tonya, more wine, Tonya, cheese for the pasta, Tonya." Sometime though, he looked at her, her husband, from under his white cap, his hands raw cut by stones, scorched by light. "Tonya, Tonya, look at you, you're a disgrace, Tonya, you are letting yourself go." Tonya, most days, would bring on the table the golden water of the polenta that she knew kept her men together.
Okay, we'll be doing that now, are we?
Yeah.
I have to tune the pipes, which won't be a pleasant experience for you, but hopefully it should be a very short, unpleasant experience for you. It's very cold here, so I don't know how they're going to respond.
I'm boiling. My ball. this is called Because He Was My Only Son. It's not autobiographic, in case anybody thinks my son could be mad or something like that. but it was inspired mostly by some myths of Sweeney. So it's called, Because He Was My Only Son. Because he was my only son, I told him, I gave you the blood of the heroes of Ulster, rather than the heather on the mount of Toro. And I gave you the warring spirit of the gathered glass, and their flaxen hair bleached by the northern tides. And at night, when he slept, I whispered in his ear, see the yarrow and the meadow sweet, they're yours to make a fragrant bed. See the long-horn cattle, white as milk, they're yours for the finding of a wife. See the harp of willow and silver strings, it's yours for the casting of spells. See the harness and the foaming steed, see the nave, see the mail, see the spear, the skiff and the bow. See the skin, the axe and the claymore, they're yours for all your victories. They're yours for all my sorrows. Because he was my only son, I didn't tell him. I gave you Sweeney's eyes that see only darkness in the crystal of the Sweeney's waters, but are blind to the quicksilver leap of the salmon. And I gave you Sweeney's crazed mind, more twisted than the black thorn on the head of the hag, sadder than a mother mourning the death of her only child. And I gave you Sweeney's mouth that speaks only foolishness, and is forever keening with hungry wolves. And at night, when he sleeps, I whisper in his ears, son of Ulster, son of Sweeney, son of mine, see the yarrow in your flaxen hair, see the hound, see the crow, see the furrow on my brow, they're yours for all your victories, they're yours for all my sorrows.
Dancing towards evening. I am a woman
dancing on the repentant sky that scrawls shadows on the heap of words. I am a woman dancing towards evening under my soles, the day dust of tamarisk, rose pink, stridulations of dittany. I am a woman dancing, amber compromise on the plane tree, spiriting ventures on the day of the moon, dancing, strings of step, labyrinths, cluster of stars. I am a woman dancing my way home.